Good evening, Stunt Granny fans. This is OPA number 117. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting to my right is Ken Phillips. What's happening, sir?
Hey, man. Good to be back again recording another episode. Thursday night. Got some Thursday night football happening in the background here. At the DeFrango household for this record. It's, you know, I feel like we're... It's been a long day here, but we got some interesting topics, I think, tonight, Kevin.
Think if you have a job, it's probably been something of a long day. And it sounds like the gentleman in our first story, he wanted to not just have a job, he wants to be an entrepreneur, sir. Or at least a business owner. I believe I heard that there's a difference between entrepreneur and business owner, which does make quite a bit of sense.
Right. Well, he is definitely a business owner. Whether or not that includes being an entrepreneur, we will push that aside for a moment. But he decided that he was going to apply, actually, for assistance from the government for... minorities and disadvantaged, classes of persons that are kind of given eligible for certain benefits, say from the
the DBE program is what they were referencing in this article.
Yes, a disadvantaged business enterprise. So it was originally designed to help minority and women-owned businesses win government contracts. Now, he submitted proof, I guess, quote-unquote, of his minority status by sending in this DNA test that he had done. And it showed him to be 90% European, 6% Indigenous American, and 4% Sub-Saharan African. So he seemingly had never identified as a minority.
Because they definitely broach that subject, but maybe don't go fully into it in this article.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like they definitely lean towards saying that he never identified that way.
Right.
And it certainly seems like, at least from a visual context, if you're thinking anyone from Africa, I would always think of someone with a darker skin tone than you or I, which I would put in the white and or Caucasian territory.
Right. But I mean, there are also light-skinned black people.
Correct.
So, you know, there people can kind of like I know that I worked with someone who actually I didn't realize, was black, basically, because they've called themselves black, I guess. So, but gotcha. They had, you know, African American ancestry, but were very light skinned,
mm-hmm.
And I didn't, you know, her hair was. You know, like frizzy, like a African American hair.
Gotcha.
But or African hair, I guess I should say. I didn't put it together really for a while, and it kind of surprised me. But then I guess you know, so much to say. It's a very shall we say sensitive topic for a lot of people. But,
I mean, the article does kind of, raise some interesting questioning, just within the whole, thing.
What is it that makes someone, you know, certain race, quote unquote?
Right.
Because even the concept, really, of race is kind of a BS concept, like... It was supposedly in, you know, scientific, you know, racism was basically made, propped up by science for some point,
Yeah, for a long time in humanity.
You know.
Well, at least when we had science, which really hasn't been that long.
Right. But, you know, people try to use, like, phrenology or, you know, the shape of, you know, people's heads, you know, who are quote-unquote white or, you know, black or, I don't know, Indian, Asian, what have you. Everybody had different sized heads. And it was, you know, they supposedly, it was a science behind it. But, you know, if you look, there are mixtures of, you know, all kinds of different people. And
And pigmentation people
fall on a line. You know, it's not like you can say, like, definitely this group and that group. It's just kind of like a continuum, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Because within any of, the races, there are people that are darker skinned and lighter skinned. Within them, even what would generally be kind of called that. And I guess it was kind of interesting that they did mention that a large part of your identity is how you think of yourself. You know, if you think of yourself as white, you're white. If you feel like you're African American, you're,
and how other people treat you too.
Correct.
So it's, you know, cause there was, I don't know if you remember, Kevin, I don't think we even did this one on the show. Or maybe we did, but it was that, woman, Rachel Dozal, who, was a white woman who was claiming to be, or she was running the NAACP or something like that in her, I forget what
I'm trying to think of what she was doing exactly, but she ended up identifying as being African American
without having any ancestry, as far as we can tell.
Right, but I mean, if she wanted to pull out what this guy did with the 4% sub-Saharan African, I mean, I would assume that if we do all tie back to, you know, Africa is the birthplace of humanity.
Yes.
That everyone would have some percentage of that in their DNA, I would assume.
Well, I mean, that is an interesting question. You know, how does that fall out in terms of the DNA test? And this particular DNA test that he's using, they were... in the article giving reasons why this was kind of a more unreliable DNA test. They don't test as many of the markers as do, say 23andMe or the Ancestry.com. This was like some kind of second rate DNA testing service, basically.
Yeah. Cause his, the Ancestry test that he took, and I mean, this really isn't surprising either because he took it in 2010. Mm. Oh my gosh. It was, I saw someone have a 2005 to 2018 or something like that. And it was just like the little memory cards that go into a cell phone. And the one says 12 megs and the other is 12 gigs.
What was the years on that?
I think it was, was it 05? And I want to even say that it said 2014 or something like that.
Oh, okay. So like 9 years or something? Or
yeah,
so.
9 years.
That sounds about right. That's pretty crazy.
So, you know, just from that kind of a technology aspect, you know, I guess that kind of made me think about this. So, I mean, in 2010, it only had 176 markers, but now they're using 70,000 DNA markers. And I guess
that seems like a lot more to me.
yes. Yeah, just a couple more. And it is kind of interesting that, and it would make some sense that as you get more people to take these tests, that you can kind of update your database.
Become more accurate, yeah.
And become more accurate. So even if you take one It would be more accurate if you take it after other people.
Yeah, so it does seem to me that this person is kind of making a, I don't know, I want to say political stance in order to kind of basically try to call this program out as being inappropriate somehow or ridiculous somehow. Like, that's kind of what I felt like about it, but.
It certainly seems like he does not agree with the concept that it should just help out minority and women or minorities and women specifically, and that it should just help out startup businesses. Now, and I mean, I guess this is something that I haven't looked into, but I would assume that there are other programs that would cover non-minorities.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I feel like there's
It's
probably resources out there of some kind.
despite the fact that Stunt Granny is in fact a company that is on the record books. I can't say I've really ever reached out for any type of assistance to build us a studio
Right.
anything outlandish like that. So I'm a little not knowing at all about what you could do as a small business to reach out for help. I would think that if you had a business plan, you could probably get some type of money from a bank, I would assume.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know what type of a government program, since this did say that it helps people get government contracts, which is kind of a weird thing too. Like, I know that even in my line of business, in architecture, people that tend to do government work tend to just do government work. Like, they don't tend to do, people end up kind of specializing in stuff. Because, I mean, I know that some big firms just, do a lot of schools. Like, that's their thing.
You probably have to do things a certain way to deal with, that kind of a government client, I guess. You have to.
Yeah, things are just different depending upon upon the client and whether it's the government or the not government.
Yes. So I guess the idea would be that the disability, there are certain classes or races, quote unquote, that are less given less opportunities, have less like connections, kind of to the levers of power, if you will. And this is like a way to kind of like remedy that historic injustice. But then you are sort of at that time saying like, race is meaningless, or some, or race does not mean, there's not really a thing as race. Like, that's not really a difference, right? But then you're using this, race as kind of the way to test when you're giving this aid. So it's kind of like a weird self-contradiction in a way.
Well, yeah, and I mean, even he seemed to want to antagonize the situation where at least establish better criteria for the program. But where do you stop? Do you say you need 50% if the testing is a factor?
Right.
If 50, and that's one of those ones where I just kind of get annoyed, where it's just like you're devil's advocate. Well, what if the person's 49%? It's just like, if 50% becomes the benchmark, what happens at 49%?
Well,
Again, I guess if it's a social construct, The testing to me only seems like one of those things that, well, A, he was asking the government to pay for it and not himself. So he really could have done the testing himself.
You would think so. I mean, it's not that expensive.
But, you know, that would be one of those things where I guess if that type of testing was involved, wouldn't you think that the government would need to pay for everyone's testing? Or you'd have, or you, I guess you'd have to explicitly say that that's on the person applying and leave it at that.
Well, they did also kind of get
a nominal fee to to get access to whatever these contracts are.
Sure, I think you know when you get a passport, you have to pay to get your photos. You know, if this is a similar kind of idea of a government service, it's not unprecedented that you would have to pay some kind of fee to get that.
Yeah, this is a very good point. I will be paying very soon to renew my license.
That's true. Another example. Another fine example, Kevin. Paying fees to the government.
Yeah, so I mean, I guess I could see, you know, paying for your own test. Now, I mean, again, like, he's seeking to have them pay for it. And it's just like, nah, dog, that's, sorry. I guess now it's sorry. You should be paying for that, pal. That burden is on you, not on them.
Yeah, it's a. They did get a little bit into the American or the Native American situation, since I think it was 6%. He said he had Native American blood or DNA.
Right, and there were a couple other interesting factoids in this article.
Well, I had read that or heard that about like the Native tribes. Like, and how they how they choose who is a member of their tribe, or how they decide who's a member of their tribe. they kind of all have their own rules, but most of it comes down to showing you some kind of historical record that you were part of you know, you can trace it back to a known, you know, tribe
known,
member.
Yeah,
yes.
A known, yeah. Someone had to have at least known your great grandfather or something like that.
And you have to have some kind of records and, you know, a, you know, birth certificate or something like that would help to like trace you back to them. And sometimes they can be very strict, even in cases where people have sort of traditionally thought themselves and even, you know, lived with other in the community, but still not be accepted as part of a tribe. So at least from what I've read.
Yeah. And I mean, that was the other thing. It's kind of like, nah, you're kind of either in or you're out.
So it doesn't really, yes, it doesn't really have to do necessarily even with DNA to them. Like,
right.
It really wouldn't matter unless you could.
It is a 100% social construct for them.
Yes.
You could come walking in and kind of do all the work and eventually get voted into the tribe. You just have to put in whatever, you know, work you need to,
well,
I suppose.
I suppose that could happen. I'm not sure how often that happens. because I think it you know, the way it's set up is that each tribe can kind of make their own rules on who they let in. But yeah, a lot of them do have like rules about having to prove your ancestry to specific, like, known tribe members. So you can't just walk in and show a DNA test that's like, hey, I have, you know, 60% Native American blood. Let me in your tribe. They're just not going to do that. So I don't think it's interesting because they kind of have a sort of like there's no recognized like authority in terms of who can say who is an African American in that way. So it is a weird situation, I think, because yeah, like you're trying to basically the goal, I would think, with any kind of like program like this would be to kind of equal the playing field so that you don't have this like disparity between white and black people. And,
right.
And then you have to kind of like use that same weird, you know, the racist ideology almost in a way, or at least the racist concept you know, to administer the program itself. So it's a weird thing.
Well, yeah, and I did find it equally interesting that, at least as far as that went, they said that this isn't the first time that this program has had a challenge similar to this one. But they also mentioned that the Supreme Court in the 1920s had a couple of cases that of people trying to claim they were white, but the social construct of their own races ended up doing them in. 'Cause one was a Japanese gentleman, and I did find it really interesting that an Indian man said that race scientists considered Indians to be Caucasians. So he argued that he was eligible for naturalization, but that was not accepted at the in 1923. I mean, this was a little bit ago.
Yeah, they removed the goalpost a few times there.
Right.
Well, because at that time, I think it was you had to be. Well, was it 1923 even they did that?
Yeah, because the 1920 was the case with the Takao Ozawa, the Japanese gentleman who was white-skinned enough to claim that he was white.
So this was when the law was that only free white persons, quote-unquote.
And persons of African nativity or persons of African descent could be naturalized as U.S. citizens, yeah. So there was a little bit of a restriction on who could be a naturalized citizen in these times.
Wow, that's pretty crazy. So yeah,
that isn't that really that long ago. That is like a well, almost you know, when my father was born. So.
Mm-hmm. So that was challenged by at first I think a Japanese immigrant who tried to say that since he had white skin, he was qualified as white. And they ruled against that because they were just saying Caucasians only. Race scientists at the time excluded Japanese from the Caucasian race. And then you say in 1923, there's an Indian immigrant from India who tried to argue that since he was from India, he was from a Caucasian race. But they said that that only applied to what was popularly known as the Caucasian race, which is a strange dodge there. Because at first they used the scientific justification, and then they changed it to be the kind of like popular opposite, well, you know, different anyways,
right?
Definition of what it is. So pretty weird.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting thing to think of it, I guess. I guess sometimes I think of it divided into somewhat neat lines, but there are not really any neat lines, I would say, to come to speak. Like, I, you know, things like this kind of, you know, bring that out, that there are more shades of gray with, you know, with it being a social construct instead of something that is just determinable through a test.
And, I mean, this could be possibly a hot take, I suppose. But as much as I am really leery of this kind of action from the white person with the 4% African DNA, you know, could it be that this is, you know, a good thing to kind of get out and have discussion about and sort of like come to terms with and sort of, I don't know.
even if more small businesses need help and can't get it.
Yeah.
You know, just even that statement in general, like, again, like, it's not something that I'm well versed in. But it would seem like small businesses need a little more help in general than, you know, the larger companies still probably get far more favors. You know, and that's definitely something within this story that is worth looking at, too. Again, it's not something that they really cover in this article, but it is definitely within this article, though.
You're not talking about massive tax cuts or anything like that, I'm sure, that are given to big companies.
Yeah, those types of things do not necessarily hit small companies.
Right.
I mean, just in general, maybe small businesses, and not just the ones run by minorities and women, you know, might not be the only ones that need help. That and the government could certainly be there to at least help administer a little more help than they are currently.
Yeah, because I mean, you could see even the case where there was a. You know, African American, let's say Oprah, she wants to start a small business. Like, she probably doesn't need help from the government, I would think.
So no.
Hopefully, she would not be applying for that. But you know,
that would seem like an abuse of power on Oprah's
part. Yes, I feel like she wouldn't do that. That was an absurd example, but.
Yeah, she's kind of worth a huge pile of cash.
But yes, I don't know. It could be a good discussion to have, I suppose, even as much as I disagree with his bringing this forward. Even if only to, like, have people, you know, defend why it's there, you know?
Oh.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's good to talk these things out every so often, I think.
Oh, Ken. Well, I do feel like every so often it is worth talking about dinosaurs.
You're true. That's true, yeah.
I have been fascinated with the dinosaur for quite some time.
And we forget too often that this ground that we walk on, pretty much, was once home to these ginormous... I don't know. Don't want to call them lizards, because I guess they weren't really.
Yeah, they're more bird ancestors, which is still pretty wild.
Right. That's true.
Which actually is another funny thing that this one not showing feathers in the rendering. That's the giant thunderclap at dawn, which is a lot easier to say than the South African name for this dinosaur.
All right, I'm gonna give it a go. The Letemuahadi Mufubibe. Gosh, whoa, that's a tough one.
Yeah, that's a harder one.
It's a early Jurassic dinosaur whose name means giant thunderclap at dawn. So they were just digging in the side of a cliff and came across these unusual bones. They turned out to be this previously unknown dinosaur that looks something like a Brontosaurus or a Diplodocus, the four-legged walkers who are the big plant eaters. But this one was not exactly in that same group, kind of a distant relative.
And that was, size-wise, it was quite large, but it was also closer to what we would think of the size of an elephant now. I believe it was a couple of tons heavier. I think it's like 7 compared to...
Well, I think that the elephant was around 7 tons, and that this was about 12, I want to say.
Oh, 12, yeah, okay.
Yes. So
it's
not quite,
twice the size of an elephant.
Not quite.
I guess.
Yeah, not quite twice the size of an elephant. But that's a pretty big thing. Like maybe more along the size of a Oliphant from the Lord of the Rings.
Oh boy!
Of course, we know those were bigger than normal elephants.
Wow, would not have pulled that one out.
I don't know. Those were really big, though. This might not be quite that big either, but it was definitely bigger than modern elephants. Also,
yeah, and it wasn't really. You mentioned the Brontosaurus, but it was in a slightly different family than that too, because it had. They kind of mentioned that the Brontosaurus and the Diplodocus there had column-like legs, so the legs were straight up and down.
Correct.
And this one looks a little more like a lizard because it does kind of have a bow-legged stance. Or at least that's what they're thinking it is from
I think the
bone structure.
At least the front legs. Not sure.
Yeah, the back legs look more columnar.
Mm-hmm.
Although they do look like they're a little bent too. Which would be slightly different. Like the Brontosaurus, I mean, it really is like almost a straight vertical leg is how they imagine it now.
Right. And I feel like they were saying this one is kind of, you know, not all the way there yet in terms of that, because having a column structure for the legs allows the legs to support a much larger amount of weight versus, you know, having joint, you know, bent legs. This one definitely had the front four legs or arms or what have you that were bendable. And so it kind of, to me, looks like a weird, like, hybrid dinosaur almost. Like, it's like a half man, half dinosaur.
Yeah, it does look like it could stand up straight. Like, it's going to turn into a Yeti or something like that. A long-necked Yeti.
Like, do you remember that ABC show, Dinosaurs, where they were, the dinosaurs were like weird rubbery puppets that would move around and talk? Maybe you missed that one.
I don't remember that one, no.
This one kind of reminds me a little bit of something from that show. But, I mean, more realistic looking, but still getting into that neighborhood.
Yeah, and it seems to me like they show all the bones that they have. And it still seems like they need to find a few more bones here to flesh this out a little bit more.
That's a good point. There's quite a few bones missing from their skeleton. I think they can only tell what the back legs look like because of like a hip bone, it looks like. Or
yeah, it would appear.
So in the forearm, they have a little bit of a forearm, a little bit of a wrist, it looks like.
Yeah,
so some pretty decent parts to like figure out the body structure, I guess.
I would think so. It does look like enough to kind of outline with how other dinosaurs of the time were built. And I guess that's the other thing that I don't think about, just like the evolution of dinosaurs, you know.
Right, so this was the time period from which they found this would have been like 40 million or 50 million years before the Brontosaurus or Diplodocus. So it is pretty strange to think about the dinosaurs being around for that long a period of time compared to, say, I don't know, humans. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
What? It's amazing to think that something could be around for such a long period of time when we've only been around so long and, you know, what, 10,000 years as a species?
Yeah.
And we've managed to basically send the planet into some kind of death spiral. So
Well, the planet's not in a death spiral. The planet will be fine. Whether the conditions on the planet wipe every human out is a different question.
Well, we're going to take a lot of the animals with us too, I feel like. So it's
yeah, something always seems to live.
Something will live. What would be the mammals of the future? If everybody says cockroaches, that's a common one.
Oh, right.
Probably something that lives underground. It's got to get a good chance, though, I got to think.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with raccoons. They're going to be the ones to take over after us. They already have thumbs, basically. They're already kind of smart. Like, they're just pretty much right in the position that they want to be there to draft in and kind of take over after we screw everything up.
Yeah, it seems like the trash panda definitely has some survivability odds in its favor.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since so many of them live in sewers in cities. That seems like good protection from any adverse weather.
Absolutely. There's a, global warming. They can just hide out in there all day and come out at night. They are going to be the ones to inherit the earth, Kevin. Weird nocturnal raccoon people.
And maybe we'll find out at some point with our ghost spirits in the ether that raccoons have now dominated the planet Earth longer than humans.
Hmm. Well, hopefully our ghost spirits from the future can master time travel and come back and tell us one day, because that would be quite a tale to hear.
Mind blown. That's what would happen. My future self comes here and says something to me.
Right.
Mind blown.
I seriously, when I was younger, I thought about that. I was like, I remember a day and like trying to be like, okay, remember today's date. And if you ever invent time travel, come back here to this date. And I was like looking out in the yard. And
tell me that time travel's real.
Right. So I was like, I think I must have watched Bill and Ted recently before that.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely wanted to time travel because of Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
It looked like a lot of fun. They made it look like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm going to assume now that it probably isn't going to be that much fun to do that.
We'll have to wait and see until the next Bill and Ted movie comes out, Kevin. They did say they're on, I think Keanu Reeves and Alex Winters are both on board, so we're going to have to wait and see what happens there. You know who does see a lot of things happening, Kevin?
Oh, smooth. Smooth. Who, Ken?
Well, it's strange that you would say that way.
Who?
Because I am referring, of course, to Barn Owl. They have very big eyes, Kevin.
Yeah, this was one of those things that, I suppose I was familiar with the fact that owls can turn their heads 180 degrees, or 360 degrees.
All the way around.
Yeah. All the way around. I did not realize, that the reason that is possible is because their eyes are always looking straight ahead.
Right, they can't turn their eyes in their sockets.
Yeah, I was like, oh, well, shit, I guess I didn't realize this part of the equation. You know, I just thought it was wild that they could do it. I'm like, why the fuck do they need to do that? Well, it makes way more sense why the fuck they need to do that.
Right. And for some reason, I thought it was because their eyes were so big that they would fall out of their sockets if they tried to move them around, but that was not correct either. It turned out to be because they actually don't have eyeballs, so to speak. They're more like eye tubes that kind of are cylinder shaped, so they extend back into their skull more. So they can't really rotate them per se, because of how kind of sensitive they have to be to the dark and all that kind of specialized adaption jazz.
Right, yeah, which is still just a whole nother evolutionary thing that is completely bonkers.
And so they have to be able to turn their heads when they want to look at something. They can't just turn their eyes.
Right.
So correct. That ended up being handy for these researchers, Kevin, who were studying attention deficit disorder. And they were able to use these barn owls because they could tell what they were looking at unambiguously. And they also had been able to look. So they were able to do this and locate a area of their brains that seems to be responsible for attention. So that was the first time that such an area has been discovered in any kind of animal. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, this is another one that's just really fascinating, and like how it connects with the ADHD, because they always have to pick, you know, they're, I guess the article's talking about a lot of the which information does your brain choose to go with in any given situation? And that's what they're trying to do to help kind of solve the ADHD problem, is that, you know, they are trying to figure out how the owl focuses in on a certain, and I believe it's sound. Because of this distinct response in the brain that they found, like you were talking about. So they're hoping to try and figure out how to, you know, kind of connect the two events from happening.
Yeah, because any given moment, you're going to have a lot of different stimuli kind of coming at you. So your brain has to be able to decide what it's going to be paying attention to at any given moment.
Yeah, so like even you and I, which I guess I would not consider myself having any problem in that department, you know, we're still choosing between what's happening around us and kind of, you know, choosing what's important and rolling with it, even though there could be other variables, whether visual or sounds, that might take precedence.
Right. The classic, I think, is the baby crying, which our brains are geared towards making sure we're aware of, which makes it sort of extra aggravating to listen to, because you just want it to stop, basically. Yes.
Yeah, I haven't had to experience this, so.
Well, you've heard babies crying, though.
I have heard babies cry.
Yes, so it's not great even just to hear them when it's not yours, because your brain is geared to have you react to that sound.
Right.
So yeah, sometimes when people have ADHD or even other mental diseases, they said, like autism, Parkinson's, which is surprising, or schizophrenia can be tied back to attention problems as well. So it's it could be potentially very fruitful to be able to apply any of this towards the understanding of the human brain. So
yeah,
early steps, I suppose, but it was kind of interesting to me to use the owls for this kind of research.
I guess we've seen so much research now. I'm not surprised that people are using different things to study different aspects, because you can't necessarily study humans to do it.
No, I don't think you could. put a study on a human brain, you know, and do experiments on a human brain. I don't think you're allowed to do that.
Right. So, yeah, there's some ethical problems. So you've got to come up with the next best equivalent. And, yeah, I mean, there's always there seems to be an animal for every occasion, Ken, I guess is what I'm getting around to. It seems like there are multiple animals out there that mimic some type of our behavior, whether it was the chimpanzees last week that we talked about having the similar hand gestures to toddlers. It's just kind of fascinating that nature kind of repeats what repeats things in other creatures too.
And I guess that's good then for us. So we're able to like study these other animals and hopefully in this case apply what we know from the layout of the owl brain and sort of be able to translate that over to a human brain to make use of this knowledge.
I mean, it would be pretty cool if this ends up panning out and helping those who do have these problems. Because it certainly seems more widespread than before. I do think that sometimes when you add even more humans to the mix, which continually happens on this planet, that you're inviting more problems.
Speaking of problems, Kevin, who was having problems recently was the Apple stores in the Bay Area recently. Within the last month or so, month and a half maybe?
Correct, yeah. Because it says 19 counties, which is still pretty crazy. Time frame here.
But I think the one thing I read said that within like the San Francisco area, there was like 9 robberies of Apple stores within the last like 6 weeks or something. So it's really has been a problem in California, it seems.
It was kind of one of those things when I was reading this story, I'm like, I'm kind of surprised this doesn't happen more often.
Right. So basically these gangs of people run into the store while it's open in the, daylight hours.
Broad daylight. Because they said that at the one location, they typically did the stealing at 1:30 in the afternoon.
Right. The other one was around noon.
Quite literally broad daylight.
Doesn't get much broader daylight than that. That's the broadest daylight you're going to have all day.
Right.
So it's interesting because I think there was security officers there or security guards of some kind there at the stores.
But I guess the thing that made sense is that they said that a lot of times the people were out, that they'd only be there for like a minute or so.
Right.
They would literally, this is a smash and grab.
Like, and they would have 3 cars that pulled up, according to the one witness.
The one eyewitness, they said, from the most recent crime. the most recent stealing is that 3 cars came up and they just ran into the store, grabbed a bunch of shit, and came back to their cars and took off.
Right. Because they do have a lot of that equipment just kind of out and about at the Apple store.
And I mean, I just to equate it to around here, certainly the outdoor mall seems to be a more popular concept these days. One that might have easier access to roads in front of them to make such a bold getaway possible. If you're in a giant one building that you need to run out through the rest of the building to get out of the store,
you can't park your car right outside the Apple store if it's in a mall, inside mall.
Yeah, if it's an inside mall.
Unless you're Jake and Elwood Blues, I suppose.
Yeah.
They famously drove through a mall.
I would think that might tip some people off if you drove through the mall and then stole stuff.
Right. You've lost some of the element of surprise then, for sure.
Some of the element.
They don't know exactly what you're going to do yet, but they know something's afoot for sure.
Yeah, they're not sure which store, man.
That's right.
It could be any of you bitches.
So yeah, just basically running in, unhooking, ripping phones, iPads, etc.
Yeah, whatever
off the tables.
Whatever they could grab in a very short time period. And then get out of there. And they had stolen up to $1 million in goods in the time frame.
Now my question is, it seems like Apple is able to have some kind of kill switch, right? And to know if these are stolen phones, they should be able to disable them somehow, I would think.
Right.
Now, that maybe leads to these gangs or mobs to be able to either sell the phones just for parts, or, probably also as possibilities having some way to kind of jailbreak or countervent the safety features or security features that Apple has on their phones. So it doesn't seem like they would keep doing it and doing it if they weren't getting some kind of benefit out of it one way or the other.
Yeah, and I would figure the parts might not pull in enough money. Maybe they would. I would think that they might know how to jailbreak, for lack of a better word, the phone. To be able to still make it functional. Because, yeah, you're not going to sell that thing even on a black market if it doesn't function.
Wouldn't think so. Somewhere else I read said that they have it set so that it won't charge if it's outside the...
And do we need to change the name to just the illegal market and not try to...
See, this is part of the problem, Kevin. I don't know.
Blame those of a different skin tone for the illegal market.
That's why I think black and white is just really dumb names. I think they really were really, of all the things that were bad about racism, the nomenclature is up there, I would say, as being a bad part of it. But yes, Kevin, no. We're the black market being the underground market. The sub-legal
tie
market.
Tie it together, Ken.
Yeah. Well done, sir. Well done.
But anyway, I guess to get back to it, I wouldn't think that you'd try to steal this much merchandise without having some plans for it.
So,
it's kind of it's the opposite of the Swedish crown jewel heist that we had the boat get away for. This is just normal car, but
it's probably easier to sell iPhones than it would be the crown jewels of Sweden.
Yeah.
I agree.
As someone's going to have... the somewhat reasonable amount of money that it takes to purchase a phone as opposed to, scepters of solid gold.
And you can show people your iPhone without them knowing that
it was stolen.
Yes.
What?
Unlike the crown jewels of Sweden, which, as far as we know, have not been recovered yet. Still out on the loose. Those guys are probably at the top of the Heist Hall of Fame, I suppose.
Yeah, they could be. So at this juncture, just because, at least in this case, they have seven people in prison already. They believe there's like another dozen possibly ready and just not officially named in this series of robberies. So there are a large number of people, because 19 was the number, I believe. Or 17 members.
Right, that's what they were saying.
Yeah, so seven of them are caught, 10 of them are still kind of out there, but being monitored, I suppose.
So yeah, and it's kind of crazy that this is so organized and it's kind of brazen.
Yeah, but again, like, it seems like one of those things that there really is an easy access to it, so I can understand the allure of doing so. And I guess that's one of the reasons why I'm surprised it hasn't happened more. Because you could do that around town here, honestly.
Yeah, you could, but Kevin,
I'm glad that it hasn't happened.
You're going to eventually get caught, it seems like, is the moral of this story.
Yeah, these things, robberies do not usually end well.
Yeah, especially when it's all on videotape. There's multiple instances that you could watch on the video here.
And there are, if they're paying any attention at all, there are multiple witnesses because they are doing it in broad daylight. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that can go wrong. Even if they don't really see your face, if I would assume if you catch a license plate or two here and there, or even if you start being able to cobble together some common numbers and letters from multiple witnesses, that it would start to narrow down who might be perpetrating these crimes.
Yeah, and eventually, after seeing the same people maybe in multiple video tapes, you'd be able to kind of narrow it down as well.
Yeah, just because of the physical aspects, mm-hmm. You know, yeah, size, weight, all that.
Yep. So it's not a great long-term plan, I would say, in terms of, you know, retirement options, say.
Yeah, and especially hitting counties that are fairly close together. I think being a little less predictable, they mentioned in this that they hit multiple some locations multiple times. Because I believe one or two places got hit three or four times.
Yeah, that's right.
So going back to the same well kind of also helps narrow down about where you're probably operating out of.
Yeah, you're kind of like giving them a circle to draw around a map and sort of like say that you're somewhere in the middle.
Right, yeah. I would think that you're kind of narrowing down yourself for them by not spreading your enterprise out a little bit further.
Yeah, we're basically saying that crime doesn't pay, kids.
Yeah, even if you spread it out, you're still going to get caught at some point. Again, especially with all the cameras around these days, like in the goddamn Apple store. Like, really? Like, I mean, definitely cameras everywhere. Even if you cover up, again, like.
Yeah,
you can't do that shit multiple times.
Yeah, these guys get points for their brazenness, I guess. But they lose points for long-term thinking, I would say.
Yeah, long-term viability is not the best way to go for this one.
Yeah.
Well, Ken, I think it's time to wrap things up. And we are continuing down, at least on this side of the recording divide, the Oktoberfest theme. Because really, it's the end of September. This is really when Oktoberfest happens. should really be this this coming weekend, I think, most ideally. And we got another couple of Oktoberfest beers here.
Well, mine is an Oktoberfest, actually. from Taft's Brewing Company, a German style lager, and I thought it was quite good. I would have this again.
Yeah, mine was High Wire Brewing Zukas Fest, but it is officially called an Oktoberfest beer. And because I think this was one of the ones that gold medal winner at 2016 Great American Beer Festival in the Marzen category.
There we go.
Yeah, and I really like these. They're very light and easy to drink, which a lot of German beers are. Not usually particularly high in the alcohol. It's only 6%. The hops, definitely a lower number, which they do not even list here. And really, you know, really is not in enough of a quantity to taste that much of anyway.
Yeah, I think mine was also at 5.7%. So that was just fine for me.
Yep. Eat, drink, be merry. Try either one of these, because I don't think that either of these were actually local. Yeah, this one was mine from Highwire was Asheville, North Carolina. I'm not completely sure where yours was from.
I believe it's Cincinnati.
Okay. Ah, well, that one might not be as easy to get if we're getting North Carolina beers. I would assume they're distributed in a slightly larger radius.
Well, you know what they say about assuming, though, Kevin.
I was going to say, the good thing about Cincinnati, it's on the border with Kentucky. There are a lot of dual sales down there.
That's true.
So it is quite possible, just because some people are on the other side of that river over there.
There are some people down there.
And that's just Kentucky.
I've been there myself.
A lot of people.
Some fine folks. Florence, y'all.
Some of the people that work in Cincinnati live in Kentucky. These things happen.
That is true.
So
that's where the airport is, Kevin.
Yes, it is. Did a McDonald's there. That concourse is not open anymore. All my hard work. One of the few McDonald's I would say I actually designed. And
they closed the concourse?
And they closed the concourse. So boo. Boo. And with that, at DeFrango 11, at Gozer 33, Brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to us. And have a good night.
Screw you, Cincinnati Airport.